Hello, and thank you for listening to the Skeptics in the Pub online podcast. This unedited audio is taken from Skepticamp 2024 and was recorded in front of a live audience in Manchester on the 18th of October 2024. A video of this, and many of the recordings hosted by Skeptics in the Pub online, are still available on our YouTube channel. We hope you enjoy this podcast, and if you would like to support what we do, you can join our Patreon. Find us at Patreon, Skeptics in the Pub online.
That was meant to sound like a beer can opening, as per our live streams.
Good morning, Manchester. How are we today? Right, welcome to the first ever live recording of It's Bloody Flat, the podcast where we debunk the round world propaganda that's spread all...
Cut.
Shit. Sorry, folks, wrong script.
It's Friday.
Shit. Good morning, Skepticamp!
Right, give me a cheer if you've been to Skepticamp before.
Give us a cheer if this is your first time at Skepticamp. I mean, you could at least sound enthusiastic.
And give us a cheer if you're a regular Skeptics in the Pub online viewer. Oh.
And give me a cheer if you've never tuned in to Skeptics in the Pub online before. Ego, throw them out.
Oh, no.
So, David, what is Skeptics in the Pub online?
Well, it's funny you should ask. So Skeptics in the Pub online is a coalition of skeptics from across the UK and Europe. We came together in April 2020, for some reason, can't remember what happened there, to put on regular talks for the skeptical community while lockdowns meant we couldn't meet in pubs. And we love the community that sprang up around SIDPO so much that we decided just to keep going. Since then, we've hosted, I think, 117 live talks and countless hours of Zoom calls afterwards in our virtual pub that happens every Thursday. And we've seen countless dogs and cats, excellent cats and dogs, yes. We all love the animals on stream. And we've even won an award, look, an Ockham Award.
Only one.
Only one. We don't need more than one, that's fine. How many has anyone else won? Fine, carry on.
We have a phenomenal tapas of events, of talks for you today. Some of the finest skeptical minds from all around the country and Europe who had nothing better to do on a Friday. Okay, so to kick off with, our first speaker for Skepticamp 2024 is Heidi, talking to us about the woo of we.
Ooh, the fancy magic clicker. Right, here we go. Good morning, everyone. My name is Heidi. I am going to talk to you about the woo of we today. So, what is urine therapy? This is really why I'm doing this talk, and it is because I have found that there's quite a lot of people who use their urine to try and cure diseases. So it is the use of human urine for medicinal or cosmetic purposes, and so people will drink it. They will apply it to their skin, to their hair, to their gums. They will swirl it round in their mouth. And they claim that it cures cancer, acne, asthma, thyroid disease, scurvy. I mean, yeah, we see a lot of scurvy these days, don't we? Hepatitis, TB, and much, much more. In fact, anything you can think of, your urine can cure it. It heals wounds. It stops hair loss. It prevents deafness. It strengthens the sight if you put it in your eyes. It makes your skin glow and your joints limber. So, you know, you don't need to bother with a hip replacement. Just drink your own piss. Your morning midstream urine is apparently the best. So discard that first bit, catch all the middle bit, discard the last bit. There you go. Stick it in a container, drink it throughout the day. And it seems to have been popularized by John W. Armstrong. It seems that his family treated minor ailments with urine. And this was on the basis of a Bible verse which said, drink waters out of thine own cistern and running waters out of thine own well, which they interpreted to mean drink your own pee. I've tried to find out a little bit more about this quote, and it actually seems to be more to do with not shagging other people. So staying, you know, keeping fidelity with your marriage. And so he went off and he devised urine-based therapies for thousands of people, treated loads and loads of people, devised therapies for them, said, you know, drink this at this time and age it for this many days and drink it at this time and it will cure all of this. And he published a book called The Water of Life, which was a treatise on urine therapy. And I think that was published in 1944, I think it was. So what does urine contain to make it so amazing? I mean, like, it must contain fantastic things. Well, it's mostly water. Like 95-ish% is water. Bit of urea, 2% or so maybe. Some creatinine. They are both breakdown products of muscle metabolism. Contains a bit of uric acid, various electrolytes, things like sodium, chloride, phosphate, ammonium. That's what often gives it the smell. Magnesium, calcium, sulfate. Traces of some proteins, bit of hormones maybe, some glucose as a trace of. Obviously, you know, if you're losing a lot of glucose in your urine, you need to get that seen to. You're probably diabetic. Some water-soluble vitamins. Some medications. There are some medications that are excreted unchanged in the urine. There's a percentage, pretty much everything that is. And they're medication metabolites. It is a byproduct. It is a byproduct of metabolism. It is a byproduct of your body balancing all of its electrolytes and all of its hormones and all of this and all of that. And it is a waste product. And it's not sterile. Contrary to popular belief, it's not actually sterile when it's sitting in the bladder. There's bacteria found even in the absence of a UTI. But you've just said, Heidi, that urine contains urea. Well, I've looked at my face cream, and that contains urea as well. So urea is quite widely used in creams. It is present in the skin as a substance present in the body, and it absorbs water. So it does act as a moisturiser. It has an antimicrobial effect, and it improves the function of the skin barrier. And so urea-containing skin formulations are used, and they're successfully used for scaly and dry skin conditions. So if you have something with a low urea concentration, so 2% to 10%, that moisturises your skin, it improves your skin barrier function. Medium concentration, 10 to 30%, it loosens kind of the outer layers of the skin. So if you've got a very sort of scaly skin condition, then it helps break down all that scale. And in high concentration, greater than 30%, then you can actually use it to debride kind of necrotic tissue. There is the urea concentration in urine. It's approximately 2%. So it's a bit of a piddly amount, really. And you could say, well, my face cream only contains 2%. But really, you know, urine on your face. No, it smells. It's not good. It contains bacteria. Your face cream's not marketed with bacteria in, and it probably smells a lot nicer. I'd just stick to the face cream. But, it, you know, acne. Must be good for that. I've tried everything for acne. Doesn't really work. So this was a 16-year-old boy, and he had worsening acne on the face. And it got a lot worse when he started using daily topical urine application to his face. So his mum had seen a talk show that said, urine is brilliant. Apply it to your face. It will cure all of your skin conditions. And so she persuaded her son to try it. And he'd, well, I don't really know about this. I'm going to check on the internet to see if this is true. So he checked on the internet, and the internet said, of course it's true. Put urine on your face. It's all fine. And he did see, apparently, in this case study, some improvement with fresh urine. So kind of, you know, morning urine, peed presumably straight into a cup or something, slung on his face, then rinsed off. He did see some improvement with that. But then he started applying urine that he'd just been storing in a pot, presumably in his bedroom, because it was faffy kind of doing this skincare routine every morning. So he was like, well, I'll just pee in a tub and store it. And then every time I need a bit of it, I'll just stick some on. So he'd been applying stored unrefrigerated urine, which is just full of all sorts of horrible things. And for the people that say, let's put urine in our eyes to treat conjunctivitis, maybe I should have done a bit of a trigger warning. What could possibly go wrong? So you have a bit of conjunctivitis, you know, your eyes a bit red, bit of a discharge, stick urine in it, and all will be well. No, you get more discharge. It's purulent, it's pussy, it's absolutely disgusting, and your cornea might perforate. So really don't do it. That jellyfish stings. I mean, that's got to be true, right? Peeing on a jellyfish sting? Friends is definitely a documentary. Yeah? No, for anyone who hasn't seen Friends, it is a sitcom where one of the friends peed on another one of the friends' foot when she got stung by a jellyfish. And so the theory is that peeing on a jellyfish sting relieves the pain. Well, it doesn't. It can actually result in more venom being released from the nematocysts, which are the things that actually contain the venom. Rubbing or scratching it will also make it worse. So we've gone on to like your top tips if you're ever stung by a jellyfish here. If you are stung, rinse it with seawater, not fresh water, because the change in concentration between the nematocyst and the skin and the water that you're using, you need something that's of a similar kind of concentration with solutes in. So rinse with seawater rather than fresh water. Scrape off any remaining attached bits of tentacle. So you can do that with something like a debit card or a credit card or something. And then soak the affected area in hot water for pain relief. So as hot as you can stand, basically, until the pain is relieved. There are some stings that are relieved with vinegar and some are not. So unless you're really, really good on your jellyfish identification skills, probably best to just stick with hot water. Maybe camel urine's better than human urine. I mean, like, we've talked a lot about human urine here and I'm not very fond of it. So, you know, camel urine, let's try that. So there is a practice in Saudi Arabia to use camel urine with or without camel milk mixed in with it to treat cancer. And there's a small study that I found that was published in the Eastern Mediterranean Health Journal. And there were 20 cancer patients who insisted on treating their cancer with camel urine in combination with camel milk. To power the study adequately, they needed something like 66 patients, but they stopped at 20 when they realized that every single one of them showed disease progression. And they thought, we're going to publish the results now to try to convince people not to actually do this. But the people were taking an average of 60 ml a day of this. There was no clinical benefit, funny that. Two patients developed brucellosis, which is kind of like a bacterial flu-like illness. One of them was really, really very sick from that. Seven died, and they were too weak to accept conventional treatment when they kind of finally went, maybe this isn't working. And there were 11 that ultimately accepted kind of normal treatment. So I joined some urine therapy groups just to see what people were up to. Here are some examples of what people do. There are people who swish urine around their mouths for 30 minutes to an hour. And they claim that it heals cuts, sores, renews your teeth enamel, refreshes your breath, really, and heals sore throats. There is this poor person who thought that drinking urine and using it as a facial treatment will make him more attractive to the opposite sex. And he got on the bus and smelt quite bad. And people moved away from him. And he decided that really what he needed to do was carry on doing this, but use more deodorant. And someone who used it as a shampoo couldn't breathe because of the ammonia smell. I mean, half a gallon, though. Who would use half a gallon of shampoo anyway? And there's a big red thing here, but we are almost done. And someone going, oh, don't use aged urine on your hair. It needs to be fresh. And there we go. There's an example of some aged urine. And finally, just crossing the streams from your fetish point of view. So I'll let you read that yourself. And then I think we are done at that point.
Thank you very much, Heidi.
Got to get a cat in there somewhere.
I can confirm that when you get stung by a jellyfish, it does not help to piss on it. But at the time, I would have done anything to stop that pain. It was a long time ago. So we do have some questions. The first one is, what does debride necrotic tissue mean?
So if you have, like, if the tissue has basically died and you've got it sort of black tissue around the edges of a wound or something like that, where the tissue has actually not received enough oxygen in it and it dies, then you can use urea-containing compounds to sort of break that down and leave you with your healthy tissue. Similar sort of like maggots can do the same thing, like maggot therapy can do the same thing, and they will actually eat all the dead bits of tissue and leave the live bits of tissue, so you can use it to break down tissue that is sort of dead or dying.
Next question from Anonymous. So in a survival situation, should we just ignore Bear Grylls with his urine drinking advice?
Essentially, yes. There is quite a lot of debate about this. If you are not too dehydrated, then, you know, you will be able to drink your own urine, and it's 95% water. But the more dehydrated you become, the more concentrated your urine becomes, and the less useful it then becomes to drink it. So although if you were absolutely desperate in a situation where you had no water whatsoever, you can try it. But if you've got no water, you're probably already pretty dehydrated. So what you're not going to gain a great deal of benefit from it. If you're going to die of dehydration, then you may as well try drinking it and stay alive a little bit longer. But fundamentally, you know, it is a waste product. And the more times you try to kind of recycle it through without putting extra liquid in, the less benefit it's going to be to you.
And one final question. I don't know if you know this, but in the first application of penicillin, didn't they try and reuse penicillin from the patient's urine?
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me if they did. There are some drugs that are excreted around 80% unchanged via the urine. So there is also a sort of a theoretical risk. I didn't come across any sort of case studies demonstrating this, but it's a bit hard because people probably aren't admitting that they're drinking their own urine on a regular basis when they go and see their doctor. And it's not the kind of thing that you think to ask a patient. But in theory, if you're excreting like 80% of the drug completely unchanged in the urine, and then you're drinking your urine and you're taking the normal dose of the medication, you, in theory, you could reach an overdose level. But a lot of drugs, the tolerance is actually quite high, so you may not. It would only be on those drugs where your therapeutic level is pretty close to your toxic level. But it absolutely wouldn't surprise me if you kind of go in around and extract. You try and extract things back out of the urine. I mean, people have sort of looked into that for cancer treatments, in that the cancer cells produce certain antigens that you then end up in the urine, and perhaps there's a way of purifying those to try and get the body to react to those. That is a theory. And so some people say, well, actually, if you just drink your own urine again, you're reintroducing that, and then your cells will learn that that's the thing that they need to attack. It doesn't work like that, but what it potentially is useful for is diagnosis, because those things are being produced by those cells that you may be able to find in the urine. You can analyse the urine. It's called a liquid biopsy. So that does have promise.
Shut up now.
Thank you very much, Heidi.
I have samples. I shall pass my samples out.
There
I will
samples.
Say, if you've got a problem with apples, maybe avoid.
That was the Skeptics in the Pub online podcast. For more skeptical content, including information about future talks, please like us on Facebook, follow at SITP on Twitter, or head to our website at sitp.online. where you'll also find a link to all the ways you can get in touch with us, including our Discord server. Music in this episode was provided by Thula Bora and used with permission. Until next time, thanks for listening.